Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG Pod Overflow, the Cinephobe Cold Opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
You said the OG Pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG Pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG Pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Haliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP, that's 1-800-639-8783, or text NEXT STEP to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Is there something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? I know I've been through it. I've had problems at work, problems in relationships, even problems as a parent. Sometimes you don't know where to turn to or who to talk to, particularly when you don't want to talk to someone who knows you, who might have a bias or might hold what you're going to say against you. You want to talk to someone who's experienced and licensed and at the same time distant and removed from you. BetterHelp is here to help. They'll assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can start communicating in under 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. This is professional counseling done securely online. There's a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available in many areas. The service is available for clients worldwide. I know many of our listeners are listening to us from other countries, whether it's Canada, Australia, somewhere in Europe, somewhere in Asia, or somewhere in Africa. Look, you guys can access this as well. You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available for those who need it. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. Visit their website. Read the testimonials. They're posted daily. For instance, this one from user NU after counseling with Denise Wall Marlin for 2 years on issues concerning depression, stress, anxiety, and self-esteem. Quote, I have found Denise to be an excellent counselor. She has broad experience in all techniques to get rid of anxiety and ruminating thoughts and always puts things in perspective for me. I recommend her 100%. Hell, I hear that one. I want to sign up with Denise because I know ruminating thoughts and anxiety is something I deal with all the time. So here's what you can do, and I'll do it too. Visit betterhelp.com/BOM. That's better, H-E-L-P, and join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. It's a special offer going right now for our listeners here on BOM. Get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/BOM. That's betterhelp.com/BOM.
Welcome back to another episode of Growing Up the Same. I'm your host, Trevon Edwards, and I'm joined always by my co-host, Jay Skills, a.k.a. Jason Madison. What's going on, brother?
What up, bro?
Had to throw the skills in there for people forgot.
I feel it.
And today we're joined by a special guest, Josiah Johnson. What's going on?
What's going on, brothers? Appreciate y'all for having me on this beautiful show. Let's get it.
Thank you, sir. Josiah Johnson is a producer, writer, and social media maven. He's King Josiah 54 on Twitter and Instagram. Josiah, this is the one of the two. You ready, bro?
Let's do it.
Lakers or Clippers?
Lakers. Lakers when LeBron's on there.
Mahomes or Lamar?
Ooh, Mahomes. Easy.
Atlanta or Miami?
Ooh, I'm going to say Miami just because of the tropical.
Xbox or PlayStation?
I'm going to go with PlayStation, but I'm old school.
Academics or DJ Vlad?
Vlad, but just because he's based in LA, so I've always had to, but he might be the ops now, so it's tough, but I'm gonna stay with Vlad.
A hood taco or a hood burger?
Ooh, hood taco.
Stephen A. Smith or Shannon Sharp?
Shannon Sharp.
Dorsey or Crenshaw?
Crenshaw, easy. Dorky!
Justin LeBoy or Drewski?
Drewski.
A GIF or a Twit vid?
Ooh, video. Video's always better.
Paul George or Kawhi?
Kawhi.
Soap or body wash?
Ooh, body wash.
KD or Kyrie?
Ooh, Kevin.
The Hood Healer or Eric Thomas?
Ooh, Eric Thomas.
Super Bad or Dumb and Dumber?
Damn, Dumb and Dumber. Damn, but you know, it's hard. It's a close one.
That's a close one. Life or Harlem Nights?
Damn. Oh, I'm going to go with Life, but I don't know. It's hard. It was just different. I was too young for Harlem Nights and really, really appreciate it. But Life came out at the perfect time.
Anchorman or Step Brothers?
Ooh, Step Brothers.
Tripping or Three Strikes?
Ooh, Tripping. Damn.
Baby Boy or What's Love's Got to Do with It?
Baby Boy.
Getting in a fight with your girl or getting in a fight with your mom?
Ooh. I say mom because it won't be as bad. Or no, I say girl because it won't be as bad of a mom. I'll go girl.
Christmas as a kid or Christmas as an adult?
an adult because I got kids, so I get to see them really appreciate it.
Smoking or drinking?
Smoking.
90s or 2000s?
Ooh. I'm going to say 2000s. I was an adult finally.
Eggnog or hot chocolate?
Hot chocolate.
A real tree or a fake tree?
Fake.
Mariah Carey Christmas or Donny Hathaway this Christmas?
Mariah.
Pulp Fiction or Forrest Gump?
Oh, Forrest Gump.
Elf or Home Alone?
Home Alone.
Santa or Rudolph?
Santa.
Money as a gift or a real gift?
Money, always.
Malcolm and Eddie or Homeboys in Outer Space?
Oh, Homeboys in Outer Space, but because I like weird shit. That's it. That's the only reason.
Wave grease or hair gel?
Hair gel all day.
2X tall white tee or basketball shorts under your jeans?
2X tall white tee.
Black Planet or MySpace?
Ooh, Black Planet.
AIM or BBM?
Ooh, AIM.
Superhead or Tiana Trump?
We gotta go to OG. Super OG. Oh wow.
Too Short or E-40?
Ooh, 40.
Puffy or Dr. Dre?
Dre.
Ashanti or Keisha Cole?
Ooh, Ashanti.
Hood Politics or American Politics?
Hood Politics.
Rich and Famous or Middle Class and Unknown?
Rich and Famous.
Pac or Biggie?
Pac.
Jordan or LeBron?
LeBron all day.
Steak or chicken?
Ooh, steak.
Eddie Murphy or Dave Chappelle?
I gotta go with Eddie, but it's close.
Twitter or IG?
Twitter.
And the last one, writing or podcasting?
Podcasting.
Dope. That's the one of the two.
Hey man, that one question, bro. I'm glad I was on mute. I'm not gonna lie. I yelled. That's a real one question right there.
You know, they're both actors, both really, you know, talented in what they do.
Legends in the game.
Legends, you know. Yeah.
You know, one went to jail, and one was the original throat baby. Bad. So Joe, man, you got tons of hobbies here. Tell us about you growing up watching TV.
Man, so, you know, my pops played in the NBA, played with the Bucks and the Clippers. So he had bread. Obviously, he was doing a lot better than most at those times, 80s and 90s. So he basically, you know, he had cheese, but he was a big entertainment buff, theater arts major at college at UCLA. So we had this basic satellite at the crib where we could get East Coast Day. This is like, you know, mid 80s, early 90s, you know, back before, you know, the revolution with streaming and everything. So we had this satellite where literally we could get pretty much any channel you could think of. We basically had a league pass. We were getting Cosby Show and all, you know, Different World and all these shows 3 hours in advance because we're getting the East Coast feed. So we were so ahead of the game technologically. You also had like an extensive beta collection, VHS collection. So I just used to honestly watch so much television as a kid, but just really watching it and trying to learn and understand the good stuff, bad stuff, anything you could think of. So just literally got hooked and kind of realized, like, being in LA, being in the entertainment industry, that was something I wanted to do with my life going down the road. But we would watch so much stuff. Like, he was a big TV buff, too, where I really appreciate it because that actually I got to put it to use. It wasn't, you know, a lot of times growing up, they're like, oh, you watch too much TV. Kind of like back in the day when they'd be like, oh, you playing video games too much. But, you know, as we've seen, like, both of those are big business and big industry. So I'm glad I got to be young and doing that and how that really helped me elevate me and get me to the position I am today.
So growing up in the 80s and 90s, what did you watch more, the cartoons or actually like the primetime television?
So it's funny, man, I was super advanced for my age. So obviously all the cartoons, the Mighty Mouse and the, I remember it was like a midweek, it'd be like that show Cops that came on with, you know, like Cops and like Darkwing Duck and just, you know, Chippendale Rescue Rangers. I want to say like KCAL 9 for all the Los Angelinos had that good run from like 3 to 5 in the afternoon to just like high level cartoons. So a lot of that type of stuff, but also, you know, a lot of like, I would watch Empty Nest, Wings, like, you know, all the random NBC shows, Cheers, I was a big fan of growing up. Of course, all, you know, Cosby Show and Living Color, Different World, all that type of stuff, Martin. So just having all that kind of content, it was at like a great point in my life where I was, you know, on the precipice becoming like this teenager, pubescent, but got to see a lot of stuff. But I would, you know, I would stay up, watch Saturday Night Live. And this was back in the day when it actually used to hit. But as like a 7, 8, 9 year old, I'd be up till 2, 3 in the morning. It'd get to those like demon dark hours on TV where it's just like random stuff. And then even when I was asleep, my mom would come in and she used to joke now, but she'd come in and put it on like the Christian channel. You know, so I used to sleep with the TV on. She'd come put it on the Christian channel. Honestly, like for a good portion of my young life, I'd wake up at like 4 in the morning and that would be on like, wait, what, you know, I feel like, damn, this is like some scary, ominous
that's,
shit.
But that's Pastor Kearney, man. And God!
Then, you know, you sleep and you, but you wake up like, wait, how did you get on the Christian channel? This is not even a channel I deal with on a regular basis. This was like them off-kilter ones when you would scroll past channel 13 and start hitting that weird stuff, you know, the novellas and everything like that. But yeah, man, so just, you know, thankful and blessed. And obviously, like growing up in an entertainment-based family, like that was kind of just our shit.
There was always like those shows too that you would know, like it was time to turn the TV off when that show came on. Like Dragnet, I'll be watching Nick at Night. And whenever Dragnet came on, I was like, all right, it's time to go to bed.
Yeah, I didn't have Nick at Night, but I knew if I woke up and MASH was on, I was up too early. And if Home Shopping Network was on, I knew I was up too early.
Yeah.
Because it's like that prime time between 2 and 4. It's just like, okay, I know MASH probably was dope. And I just really didn't really fire it up, but I just wasn't going to try to do it anyway. Cause like the latest I could stay up was 11 PM. My auntie, I mean, my great grandma, rest in peace, would let me watch Jerry Springer. We would stay up just to watch Jerry Springer. Cause that was just, that was fire, bro. Like that was a good prime. That was probably the most time we would watch Jerry Springer and Cheaters. Like those are two shows that like me and my grandma would be just dying laughing. And she made me watch Laker games because she loved Magic Johnson at the time.
Yeah, for sure. Of course. Yeah, I mean, I grew up, my pops played for the Clippers, so I spent most of my life as a Clippers fan. But you know, Lakers on KCAL 9. Like, it was just, you had to have respect for, you know, the city squad, man. But we had so much just good, like that Gilligan's Island, Small Wonder. Like, I used to be on just the most random, absurd shit that, you know, I'm glad like
Small Wonder was so fire. I was actually gonna ask you this or that with Small Wonder, but I was like, maybe the audience not gonna know what that show is. But yeah, with Vicky the little robot chick, that was the other
joint with Evie that she could do the shit with her fingers and make everything freeze. Like I think kids aren't really Charles in Charge, even though Scott Baio is a bitch now, but Charles in Charge was my shit too.
Yeah, and then like when Snick came out, like I didn't realize how much they were parroting like the older like TV model, you know what I'm saying? It happened like 4 shows and like Are You Afraid of the Dark and Clarissa Explains It All, and then all that being like a kid version of SNL, like you know, I remember when I was a kid, because I wanted to be an actor or whatever when I was a kid, so I wrote Nickelodeon because once I figured that out, I was like, ooh, they need to have a kid version of Jay Leno. I'm like, they need to have a kid talk show at night. I was like, I need something to watch at night. And I was like, I wrote him a letter like, y'all should do this.
I'm sure they probably stole your shit and made a show out of it. And right. It didn't break
they,
no
they definitely, they definitely flipped it. And he wasn't even aware. You know what I'm saying?
Not at all.
So you mentioned your dad. How was it your dad being in, especially a hood classic like White Man Can't Jump?
This is the thing, like, so he, like I said, he was a theater arts major in college, so he was always interested in acting and doing stuff and did a bunch of stuff, you know, throughout his professional career. But once he retired, it was like, oh, it was just open. So I remember that was like, I think they started filming that probably like 91, so maybe like early 91 or 90s, he got the script. So I was reading lines with him, so I was reading like Wesley Snipes' character, you know, reading all the other lines as he was practicing and going for auditions and stuff. And it's funny, while they were shooting, he literally looked the way his character Raymond does, obviously, like, you know, unkempt beard, all that type of shit, crazy. He looked like that for like a good 4 or 5 months. So he was just always kind of in character around the house, like with the look, and it was hard to look. And it was like my pops, just because it was like, damn, what's going on, bro? He looked so hurt and so, you know, like so trash and low as an individual just because he was in that character. But going on set, seeing Wesley and Woody, but even like the behind the scenes stuff, like they had to do like a training camp before they started shooting with like Wesley, Woody, all the major guys that were going to be in a movie, like, you know, playing basketball and workouts, you know, 3-on-3 and Weeds. I remember they were at like Beverly Hills Y, I believe, or some other spots, like just going to that and seeing like these dudes hoop and kind of seeing them off camera and stuff. So for him, like, I remember being in the theater when it, like the first time, like this premiere or whatever it was, and that scene came on and just how everybody in the theater just went crazy. You know what I mean? Like, you know, when you get those rare moments where it's just like uncontrollable laughter, like you just see some shit and you've never seen it before. And it's funny, I think he had kind of ad-libbed when he goes in and robs a store.
Hey, give me your money.
Raymond, that you?
No, this ain't Raymond. Nah.
Take off that goddamn mask and put down that gun.
He's like, no, this ain't Raymond. That's basically him trying to do like his Mike Tyson voice. So he had ad-libbed that scene, and then they ended up using that version of it. And just to see how that, and that is funny, like, he, you know, 5-time All-Star, College Player of the Year, all this great shit, all these accolades on the NBA side, but everybody from our generation just knows him as the dude who robbed a liquor store and White Man Can't Jump. Like, they don't know. They're like, oh, you hoop too? Oh, wow. You know what I mean? So it's a funny deal. But like that, Blue Chips, he did a bunch of shit where it was just like, oh, these are like hood, like hoop classics. So for him to be a part of those, man, it's super wild.
Yeah, it's crazy how like much that scene stands out in just the history of cinema. You know what I'm saying? You wouldn't even think about it like, you know, at the time, but there's not a lot of great basketball movies. I mean, there are a few, but like, you know, there's obviously White Man Can't Jump, He Got Game, Hoosiers, you know, whatever, a couple others. And then like, even you look at Blue Chips, I remember when that movie came out and I expected it to be a lot bigger because it was like Shaq and Penny and, you know what I'm saying? It was like, why isn't this movie more popular? I still couldn't figure out like why that movie never got the love that I feel like it should have got.
It was good. I mean, honestly, from a basketball standpoint, like the basketball scenes were fucking well done. Like it felt like, you know, as hoopers, I think when we watch stuff sometimes, it's like, damn, this looks like, ugh. Like who's in charge of the basketball and this shit? It don't look realistic at all. Like where that movie was, and I go back and look, and it's like, I don't even think it made its budget back, which is like absurd. Just thinking about, to your point, they got Shaq, who at that point was the most popular hooper on the planet, right? You know what I mean? Just like everybody knew Shaq, Penny, and even, Ricky Rowe, what's the dude, Matt Nover, I forget what his name is, but like these dudes were like, you know, in theory, like, should have been enough to help elevate it, just kind of where they were from and the different demos that we're going to be able to target. But, yeah, that thing kind of flopped, man. I feel like, you know, of all the show, there needs to be, like, a Blue Chips reboot at some point.
For sure. And what they were talking about.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Trey.
I don't know if they want to expose that, but, yeah, man, I think it was pretty G that movie rolled out like that because it was kind of like a dirty little secret anyway. So being around that, helping your dad with his lines and being around that, did that inspire you to start writing scripts?
Yeah, for sure, man. I was, it's funny. So like, you know, he had money. So I was blessed to go to like, you know, some top-notch private schools in LA for the creative arts, like Crossroads for junior high, where I'm classmates with like Damon Wayans Jr. You know, a bunch of people that are now on and getting it in the industry. You know, that's kind of like a feeder into the future of entertainment. Then even when I was a young kid, I went to school, UES, on a UCLA's campus, elementary school, and was you know, classmates with Jason Schwartzman, who's a big-time actor now. But we would do, like, these film school classes in the summertime, and he was writing scripts and making movies. So I remember, like, 9-10 years old, I would go home on the little legal pad and basically, like, format out scripts and stuff and just always been super passionate and interested about it, just being able to tell stories and create things that, you know, didn't exist previously.
What was the favorite like scripts that you read growing up, or movies that you were like, oh, this script is dope, like I love this?
So I definitely read both the White Man Can't Jump and the Blue Chips. I'm trying to think, because he would audition for so much other, you know, random stuff that he wouldn't even get, but he was like in like National Lampoon movies and all types of just random shit. I'm trying to
because I remember when I was younger, like because I started writing, you know what I'm saying, when I was trying to get into acting and stuff when I was younger too. And my parents wouldn't let me watch Pulp Fiction. I remember like everybody was talking about that movie. I think I was like 7 or 8 or something when it came out, and they were like, nah. So And so they did let me buy the script.
You was that young when that came out?
It was 94, bro. I'm born in 87.
Yeah.
But they did let me buy the script. It was in Borders. It was like in book form. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so I bought the script for that, and I bought Good Will Hunting. And I would read those like as if they were a movie. And I was like, oh my God, this is so dope. Like, I can't wait to, you know what I'm saying, watch this and do something like this. So those are like the ones I fell in love with as a kid. Like,
yeah. You know? I had that Pulp Fiction joint too. I think I was around 12 at that time. But to your point, Pulp Fiction, I was a big Kevin Smith fan who did Clerks and Mallrats. So I bought I got a joint book that had both those scripts in there. So I used to, you know, dissect. I just loved his dialogue and his way that all the characters like would appear in other movies and they all were intertwining. Such and such with somebody's cousin or this dude, you know, smash his chick who was this person's, you know, sister. And like, but it was just like, it was super cool. Like, if you watch all of his movies, there's always some connectivity.
His world is dope. Yeah. Chasing Amy and, like you said, Mallrats and Clerks and even like Dogma.
Yeah.
All of, like, he mixes and mingles all his characters. I really fuck with his style.
Yeah, for sure. Now he always cracked me up. So it's like that, obviously, like John Singleton, like Boys in the Hood and stuff like that. Like, where it's like, okay, like I think like Reginald Hudlin with House Party, and Reg was only what, like 27, 28 when he made House Party. I just think about like at that point being the black man in industry and being like, you know, a major studio committing that much bread to let you execute your vision and making a cult classic like that, that obviously spawned, I want to say, like four or five other variations, but just stuff like that where it was like, you know, I think growing up, like, we had a lot of stuff that was kind of, you know, it's feel good. It made us proud to be black. It wasn't just kind of, you know, I think there was a good point in the early 90s with TV and shit where it was just like, you know, we were getting the Cosby Show, basically every, you know, Fresh Prince, every major network was catering towards black content. Then we had that, you know, huge ass break layoff, and now it seems like it's coming back a little bit, but
But it's interesting, man, to think about how, like, old Spike and the Hughes Brothers and John Singleton and, like you said, Hud and Robert Townsend, how old those dudes were, how young they were, I guess I should say, when they were, like, putting out these movies that was, like, real radical at the time. You think about it, like, you know, She's Gotta Have It, Do the Right Thing, and, like, getting Hollywood to invest in black ideas the way that they were, like, that's just a trip, man.
You know, it's crazy. I took that for granted because I figured we didn't understand, especially us probably being so young, the small window we had during that time, because it was so much exposure to pro-black stuff. We had In Living Color. We had, you know, all these movies, Eddie Murphy on the big screen, Wesley Snipes, Denzel Washington, getting crazy. Like, every time the black movies, that's why we were like, our filmography of like seeing so many movies in like Blockbuster and local rental stuff in the black homes, and you say, oh, I've seen all these movies. When you see these lists come out, it just makes you think about it, because you're like, damn, now you might get Tyler Perry, you might get a talented new up-and-coming producer, you might get somebody that gets that opportunity to maybe succeed, you know what I'm saying? And it can't be bad, it has to be perfect, versus during those times when you're seeing TV shows on primetime television, you know what I'm saying, movies and all that things. It's just like, we grew up in a great time to see representation. You know what I mean? Especially if you were going into that field.
Sure. Give me a Fat Beach and shit like that. Like, give me some terrible black, you know, but those shits would still make you crack
up. But we needed those. We needed those to be made to be inspired, because again, somebody, Siskel and Ebert might rate that low, but to myself, Jason, you, we're going to be like, oh, Tripping was great. Oh, Three Strikes was a classic. Oh, The Wash was needed to be made. Belly, even though it was a long ass music video, is a classic. Like, those things you needed to see in order to establish culture. And that's the thing that we don't really get the opportunity to make, or we have the public forum to shit on it, not thinking about the consequences with it. What those people had to go through to get that shit made.
Like, think about DJ Pooh and Ice Cube making Friday, you know what I mean? But you know, like, I can only imagine the stuff, having worked in the entertainment industry and done all the shit, you know, all the meetings you got to do and all the people that you got to try and, you know, it's a very finite group that would have been able to look at that project and be like, all right, this shit's going to hit. And thankfully, they found the right crew to do it. But, you know, it's like, we don't really get those kind of, unless you're doing a Marvel movie or some shit like that. But it's funny, to your point, Trey, like, when you make something and you go out, and that's why I always encourage people, creatives now, like, go make your own shit. Go build your own leverage. Because if you make something and it hits, then, like, look at Issa and what she's been able to do with Insecure. Like, you know, if you go look at her web series, like, that web series, if you watch it, you'd be like, you know, oh, man, this shit is whack, whatever. Like, the audio's bad, whatever. But when you look at it and you see the way that she was able to execute her vision, how funny it was, and even they may not have had the best equipment, but look, we're going to get this shit done, and it may not be perfect. The audio may be a little janky, whatever, but HBO could come in and give us all the resources and equipment and crew and everything we need to get it professional. They just need to see that thing. That's why I look at guys like Drewski or HaHa and kind of these next generation of dudes. Like, Drewski, in my mind, is literally probably one of the most talented dudes I think we've ever witnessed and seen. Anybody that could go to a dinner party and they're just at dinner and go make a video that does 5, 6, 7 million views because it's just like, oh, I should be the insecure boyfriend, and now we're going to shoot 3 to 4 scenes. And that's just a night for him. Like, we weren't getting that off as kids. Like, we go get a night, like, we go to have a party, whatever. It wasn't like, oh, turn this camera on and let's make a funny video outside the club. Like, what, you know, to kind of capture this mood or moment. So to see what these dudes are doing now and how I think people are starting to appreciate and respect it, but it's still not at the level it needs to be, because dudes like that, like, those are the dudes I'm just like, wow, you know, like, I would throw a bag at this dude, let him do whatever he's doing, because that's what, you know, he has his finger on the pulse of the culture.
Man, I can't wait to see that dude in the movie, bro.
Shouts to Hovain and the team over there with Drewski.
Yeah, he's amazing. Like you said, and it's really incredible to see, like, this younger generation, like, the way that their genius is working with the internet and, like, you know what I'm saying? Because they're taking the tools that they have and really, like, doing some crazy shit. But I just want to say one thing about Friday, RIP Debo, you know what I'm saying? And that, to me, I say this with all sincerity in the world, that is one of the greatest films of all time. Literally every single moment in that movie is funny.
Bro, I can't tell you how many memes. Like, I think yesterday or a couple of days ago, it was literally like 2 or 3 Friday memes, unintentional, but literally like, oh, this scene works perfectly for this. I think I used like Smokey counting the money in front of Big Warren for Trump in the Electoral College. Then it was like, oh, Lamar Jackson went and dipped off and did whatever he did. And I'm like, oh, wait, I got the Ezel too with Smokey taking a But how, like, watching that movie and for our culture, because, you know, you see a lot of shit, and not to call it any particular filmmaker or anything nowadays, but it's just not, it's not top rate. It's not high level. The jokes are low hangers. It's corny. Like, they got like two or three shit jokes, which are literally like taboo no-nos in the entertainment game. But they got Pops, 35, 45 minutes, classic. They got, you know, Smokey taking a shit on the side of the house. And these are things growing up in the hood that you may or may not have had to experience in life. So relatable and whatever. Like, but that movie, to your point, like, you look at it, like, shit, the mom with the dollar, make it, and I mean, it's like every
still has a serious moment. Story. Even just like, that's what I'm saying. To me, it's so, because we grew up in LA, and I know, like, all of that area so intimately. Even the act of him banging on that door like that.
You want, boy, damn,
Charles, it's please. Funny as fuck, like, because like normal people don't have those fucking screen doors that make that noise when you bang on them, so that shit is just all hilarious. You know what I'm saying? Every single
bars part. On windows, like, niggas have bars, you really,
yeah, like the bar. Like,
we make our own prisons in the hood, but you know, it's shit that is like, you know, coping mechanisms, and it's really kind of sad when you think about it on a bigger scale level, but stuff that we as Black people can always find, we can take the most, you know, the saddest moment ever and make that shit a joke, and really as a way just to all connect and laugh and kind of cope with the situation and realities of the things we're dealing with.
And lastly, your last topic was collecting cards. Now, we have a theme, you know, growing up with trading cards. So obviously we all grew up the same collecting trading cards, but what was so special about trading cards for you?
I mean, I think it's funny. So, like, you know, this is like the early days of Costco too, but they used to have like the Tops or the Fleer, like, collector sets, whatever, for, you know, just the thrill of initially with the baseball cards, which is opening up the pack, getting the, you know, the little piece of stale ass bubble gum and being able to flip through and hoping you find that gem, you know, that the Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, or, you know, the Bobby Bonilla, or whoever, you know, I come from a different time, but like Dwight Gooden and people like that, I got shit from like 85, 86. And then I want to say once like Upper Deck came out, Upper Deck really came out, and like the cars were just so beautiful looking that it became like a, it was just, I remember everybody was trading cards, going to card shows. I guess you got a funny story for you. So my dad did blue chips with Shaq, ended up like Shaq signed like 7 rookie cards for him. Like he came back with like all different kinds. I don't know how he ended up getting them. He came through the crib like, yo, I got these Shaqs for you. So I'm like, oh shit, let's get it. So my dad ended up doing like a signing at a card show in LA. I take one of the Shaq cards, try to go sell it to a bunch of different dealers. They're like, oh, this is fake. This is phony. Like, I'm just like, who, like, I'm probably like 9 or 10 at the time, so I'm kind of hurt. They're trying to tell me, why are you trying to sell this forged card? It's like, my dad just did a movie with him. Like, he's over there, like signing shit. But, like, just to have that feeling of getting, like, you know, you flip through and you get that prime card. I remember back in the day, it was the cards that had, like, if there was, like, a misprint or some shit on them, they became, like, super valuable.
Yeah, air cards. Yeah. So it had.
I got a Clippers card with my dad from Fleer that said he averaged, like, 200 points a game, like, on the back. Like, it would give you the numbers, but it was, like, 200 points a game. That was like super, just like
that's fire. Shouts to you being the first reseller too.
I didn't sell this shit. I was trying, bro. Those things were take out the whole shit and how, you know what I mean? It was like huge back in those days. And like, oh, is this a perfect or whatever the grading scale was? You get the Beckett's and start going through them. But yeah, it was a. I still got a lot of those cards. I'm trying to find them, bro. Because
did you get those Shaq cards off?
I still got them at the crib, thankfully. Because you know, now I feel like it's coming back. And I feel like those will be super valuable, but definitely, like, I just remember, like, damn, it's like, damn, you gave me all these Shaq. I wanted to touch them because, like, Shaq signed them, but obviously they were all in, like, little, like, you know, the little screw cases or whatever. I'm just like, oh, man, let me keep these. So, thankfully, you know, they're still at the crib. I just got to hunt them down there in my mom's spot.
Yeah, that's fire, man. Was those your favorite cars that you ever owned?
Yeah, I think Upper Deck, probably having like the Upper Deck, like I forget what season it was, probably early
90, 91 with the designs in the back, and then they had the art and everything. Yeah.
The art car you stuck.
If you grew up around that age, definitely the spot I went to, I think it was over here by Centennial back in the day, Smart and Final.
Yeah.
Smart and Final had the box set, and like I begged. I think the shit was like $40. And $40 is crazy for like an 8-year-old, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
trying to get $40, bro. I begged my grandma. She got the 90, 91 box, bro. And I still somehow didn't have the full set. I think I was missing like maybe 2 cars, bro. And then it got to
maybe numbered or whatever. You organize them out. Like, yeah,
I put them all in a little package and I would have box by box by box. And then I inherited my uncle's Skybox and his Tops and, you know, Fleer. You go down the line with that shit. But it was so crazy because like I was such a perfectionist, and then I would double up the pockets where I had doubles or triples,
yeah,
to the point where the pocket was actually popping off of the pages, you know what I'm saying? And I would lose it too also when my little cousins would come in the room and be holding the binder the wrong way, just like it's just like holding a book the wrong way, and then the little pages would just fall and I would lose it because there's no way to fix it. You have to basically go buy them, and I think they were probably like 15 cents a sheet.
Yeah.
So, you know, like cards were everything for sure, man.
Yeah.
All right. So we got this question that we asked everyone. What advice would you give your 18-year-old self?
I think, you know, 18-year-old self, I would just say to be more proactive and more passionate and try and really kind of figure out a lane. But look, I had like 18, I think I was going into UCLA at that point. I really probably would have, you know, I don't even know because I feel like I did work hard and do all that good stuff. But just really, I guess, appreciate that moment a lot more. That kind of time, you know, you leaving the nest, leaving high school, becoming an adult for the first time, really, really soak that in and really appreciate being an adult more and understand that kind of period where you got a little bit of responsibility, but still get to rock out. You can still do some dumb shit. You can turn up, you know, 3 to 4 nights a week and not really have to worry about anything, but also just kind of lock in on some type of vision or path that you want to take. It took me a little bit longer than I'd hope to get to where I am today. So I wish I would have just had more, you know, I'm an Aries. So I'm great with like the big ideas and, you know, I can give you a million ideas, but now when it comes time to go hit them and do them, it's like, shit, bro. Like, you know, I'm the idea guy. Like I got to do it now. Like, but just to stay proactive and kind of, I think, you know, all of us in life, we have self-doubt. We don't think we're good enough, but believe that whatever craft you're doing that you're in that elite level. And if you're not, study the people that are going to help get you there. So as a kid, I probably wish I would have read, you know, read even more and more scripts and really kind of took it serious because I could have got to where I am today a lot sooner, but also have no regrets. So 18-year-old self, enjoy life, turn up, and just really go get it.
Yeah, man, that's sound advice, man. Thank you, Legend, for joining us. Where can they find you?
King Josiah 54 on Twitter and Instagram.